Aren't you going to say something? Oh, you want me to?
No. That was perfect. When you said, aren't you going to say something? That's going to be like our intro thing where it's like a jokey thing.
Oh, I like that.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Command SK. I know we took a little bit longer with this one because we really wanted to make it good for you and make it... Okay, I'm full transparency. We both got a little lazy.
Oh, no. Actually, the opposite. Quite the opposite. Yeah. We got busy because we... Well, at least for me, like my life has been a lot busier and full of a lot more things on my plate just recently. And so for like the past couple of weeks and also the past, the next few weeks, it's going to be quite a ride.
I'm not going to lie, you guys. I was just straight up lazy. Like I did work, but it was just like I wanted to sit in bed and watch Netflix all day. Anyways, welcome back to this episode. So we just wanted to get started. We'll get right into it. And talk about a few things that we both kind of found that were interesting and that we just came across. More so me than Curran this week, though, because in his own words, he said that he was...
What did I say? I said a lot of things in my own words, but...
Screw you. That you were busy working on other shit or whatever, so you couldn't necessarily...
Yeah, it's a high stress, high impact period of a few weeks or month or whatever for me right now.
So. No, fair enough. That's okay. But let's dive right into it. So the first thing that I kind of came across in these last few weeks that I thought was really interesting was that apparently Google's AI system or whatever helps to predict cardiovascular conditions by just analyzing eye scans, apparently, which I thought was really cool. So I actually looked at an article. It was on, I think, businessinsider.com. I'm looking at it now. And they said that pretty much Google's using I think they partnered with a company called Verily, which is one of their it says here it's Google's parent Alphabet's life sciences unit. So they're exploring new ways to use AI to identify patients' risks of suffering from a cardiovascular event, so like a heart or a stroke, for example, a heart attack, excuse me, or a stroke. And they're doing that just by looking at eye scans. And it says here that they're using something called non-invasive retinal fundus scan. So if anyone can explain that to us. But basically, it says here that they're scanning the back of the eye to figure out, using the AI. But this is cool. Apparently, they can figure out the individual's age, gender, blood pressure, whether they're a smoker, just using those eye scans. Wow. Which I thought was pretty cool. And from that they can determine, the AI can actually calculate a risk of that individual of suffering some kind of cardiovascular event. So I thought this was really interesting because it would definitely make it, I mean, I don't know too much about AI, but I'm pretty sure it would be a far cheaper alternative than having some big expensive machine to scan your eyes or whatever, right?
Yeah, it definitely seems like it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's incredible. Like the use of biometrics for a lot of new healthcare initiatives and things like that, it's really a growing space and a really hot space right now. And something that's been increasingly interesting, especially as the cost of technology drops, especially as the adoption increases and these products get out to market, or these solutions get out to market where it becomes so much better for so many more people in terms of access, in terms of also capability and functionality at various price gaps for different solutions for their health, people to monitor their health and like track their health. So that's like great.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the other thing too is I thought it was great that, that's what it says in this article, is that Google's AI algorithm apparently identified the likelihood that and I quote, that a patient would suffer from a cardiovascular event in the next 5 years with 70% accuracy. And it says here this was only slightly lower than the 72% accuracy seen in commonly used and more invasive methods that it says here require a blood test to be taken and analyzed. So I think it's great too, just from a patient's perspective, that you don't, it's not something that's going to require them to undergo any sort of discomfort or pain or anything like that. It's simply a question of using, I'm assuming it's cameras or something like that to scan your eyes and determine your likelihood of suffering a heart attack or a stroke.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I remember also I was watching Shark Tank a while back. I don't remember when. There was an episode where a company came on that was in like one of the big players or hot players in this space, where they were offering take home or at home tests for various different health options for, like, let's say one for sexual health, for example. So they were offering like solutions for customers that were non-invasive, that were take at home solutions, I believe, that they could do themselves for various, like, they had a whole like lineup essentially. It was like, imagine you take a supplement company and you have the lineup of supplements. Right. This was like a healthcare focused, non-invasive at home customer care kind of company thing, where they'd have a lineup of similar like product offerings where like you would get the chip to you, and then you would be able to perform it yourself instead of the alternative methods, similar to what you're talking about here with the eye scan thing versus that going into some place where they perform this invasive procedure on you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. And it's also really exciting as far as how this type of a technology could be applied in other settings. I mean, even in the article, they talk about how, and again, I quote, that the AI technology can be used to create new diagnostic tests to predict medical conditions by using data from existing tools. So for even one that I could think of off the top of my head, this might be an interesting way to determine how, you know, if let's say individuals with any kind of mental health issues, just to determine maybe what stage of their condition they're at, or how severe their anxiety is, for example, or whether they have the potential to become, you know, diagnosed with anxiety or depression or anything like that. So there's a lot of different applications to with this kind of thing, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely. It's the amount of amazing new innovations coming out, especially of relatively new players. As we mentioned in previous episodes, the big Silicon Valley tech giants getting their own either specialized divisions like Verily within Alphabet, or Apple, which doesn't explicitly have this dedicated health section outlined to like the public, but like they internally they have obviously their however their hierarchical structure is versus like it's more flat, but they still have all of these really large projects, really large initiatives, and something that I haven't talked about previously, but like, for example, they have, I believe, conducted the largest like fitness study or series of studies or project that's ever been done in terms of a multi-billion dollar facility, where they have leading scientists, PhDs, who, for example, on the Apple Watch, where you're able to use algorithms to calculate the amount of calories you burn, for example, doing different activities. So all of that was determined using that new healthcare, not division, but those projects and things that they have within the company that they started recently, fairly recently, just as with Google, just as with all these other giant players. So it's interesting what they're bringing in such short amount of time due to the large amount of resources and things that they can offer and pull together to really move this forward in a new and exciting way compared to previous. To how the industry was previously.
Yeah, no, definitely. And on that note too, moving ahead a little bit, another pretty interesting thing when it comes to kind of integrating health and technology that I came across was this company called PlateJoy. So apparently PlateJoy is it says in this article on CNBC that they're a personalized meal planning company. And they're offering something called a PlateJoy Health Diabetes Prevention Program. So what it does pretty much is that, so think of like a traditional, like a meal planning or food delivery type of a company, but this is like 2.0. So they're providing weight loss coaching, they're providing digital tracking tools that patients could use to keep track of what they're eating and their physical fitness or their level of activity, things like that. So they're pretty much using this, and they have virtual coaching as well. So they're pretty much using this to help, it says here, treat people with pre-diabetes in an attempt to prevent them from developing type 2 diabetes. So I think it's, and it also says that they're using specific parameters set by the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, to actually carry out these programs and help these people hopefully not develop type 2 diabetes. So I thought that was another really kind of cool example of how companies are, not just big name companies, but even startups or smaller companies like this are kind of combining technology with medical knowledge or kind of health knowledge to actually be able to impact patients' health.
Yeah, especially when especially interesting the end of the article that you mentioned, where it says diabetes is only the first disease that Bognet wants to address, though she declined to divulge which are next. So the future looks really interesting, just as interesting as what we have now as these solutions, because diabetes is just the beginning.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting to me, even though, of course, the current solution or the current initiative for diabetes itself is huge, but with even more coming down the pike, it's it's just awesome.
No, it's really cool too, and it says here that they a lot of for quite a few insurance providers for a lot of these insurance providers, they actually cover using the PlateJoy's diabetes program. So a lot of these individuals or patients that are maybe pre-diabetic, they're actually going to have it covered by their insurance plans. And it says here that they're actually going to get, after 2 weeks, they'll get a free Fitbit to use. They'll get a wireless scale that'll actually connect to their phone and integrate with the app so they can keep track of their weight that way. It says here their insurers and employers are paying about $600 per patient per year. But even for the patients that don't, I mean, not that I know the prices of other companies, but it's relatively inexpensive. I mean, $119 for a 6-month membership.
Yeah, that's,
which is not bad when you think about like all the services that you're getting. You're getting the food, you're getting the fitness tracking, you're getting the coaching, everything. So it's pretty interesting what the types of technologies and programs that are emerging week to week. I mean, that's why I'm so excited to talk about these things, because there's something new every week that's coming out.
Yeah, definitely. It's often hard to keep track and keep up with all of this unless you're in the space. So that's what Shrek and me are there for.
Don't worry, guys. We got you. Yeah. But talking about weight, meal planning and the weight loss and that sort of thing for pre-diabetics, there was something you wanted to talk about as well, I think, when it came to weight loss.
Sharing, I guess. So I know it's February 22nd, so it's been over a month and a half for like New Year's resolutions for a lot of people who would at this time begin their weight loss phase, for example, after binge eating during the holidays.
Yeah.
And then I remember we talked about it on our first episode, I think, so just a little bit. But so what's happened recently for me is that due to a lot of busy things happening and my schedule being very filled with work and lots of interesting happenings, I guess, is all I can say. Slow and steady weight gain is an unexpected creep up side effect.
Very slow for Kern, guys. Very slow.
Because, as I've mentioned previously, like I'm deep into the fitness scene, so... when I say, oh my God, I mean something along the lines of 3 pounds or something, like 2 to 4 pounds for me would be within a month to within 1 to 2 months is a very fast, rapid weight loss, weight gain for me, because I'm the type of guy who tracks macros, tracks calories and things. So for me, if I'm tracking, I know exactly how much weight I'm gaining or losing, or if I'm in stasis, so homeostasis. So because of the being busy and stuff, I've reverted to intuitive eating. So that's what normals, what I call quote unquote normals, would do or do on a regular basis, which is don't care about tracking their food, tracking their macros, just eat what you feel like eating. If you're hungry, you eat. If you're full, you don't eat, just like a regular person. So I've been intuitive eating, which essentially means I've been not being a crazy psychopath in terms of tracking and managing calories and food over the past month. So it's resulted in 4 pounds of weight gain, which for me is the end of the world, or used to be the end of the world, although now I don't even have enough time to worry about it. But recently, this week, I've gone back onto a hypocaloric phase, so weight loss, trying to just remove that excess fat that came on these past 2 months. Wanted to also share some advice, tips, tricks, or thing, or just my experience in terms of weight loss, which may be useful for a lot of people as they're probably going through something similar or something like that right now. But first, Shrek, what are you, any thoughts about that?
I wish you guys could see my face right now. That's like a week for me of like 4 or 5 pound weight fluctuations. I mean, that's that. Oh God. And this guy's over here, like it's the end of the world. I wanted to punch him in his face so bad when he told me, Shrek, I gained a lot of weight. And guess how much I gained? 4 pounds. And he looks at me like it literally is the end of his world. And I'm like, are you effing kidding me? Like, just, I can't. But no, I think it, like I've said this before, I think it's great, Kern, that you're able to keep track of all that. But Neo, it's a lot of work. But anyways, run us through those tips.
Yeah, sure. So it's, I guess not entirely just like tips or tricks or things like that, because a lot of these tips, tricks that you might hear online or read are not real actual advice. So proper advice is careful, it's considered, it's, you know. So what I'll be talking about just my experience and like what I've used or have dealt with that now that I'm going back into it. And honestly, because I haven't even had that much time to go to the gym, so I haven't worked out and haven't had a proper 1 week period where I've gone through a training cycle for a week for the past few months at least. So that's been a bummer. Also, it's my physique is not looking as good as it used to.
He looks the same,
guys. That's what regular people would say. Anyways, yeah. So I think my experience is something that a lot of people can relate to, and so I wanted to talk about it. And specifically, relates to during weight loss, or even in general. Actually, my body is extremely sensitive to water retention, and I know it's an issue and something that might be a problem, or it might be something that a lot of people face but don't even recognize as an issue. And so it might be resulting in some negative psychological effects for them when they're going through a weight loss period, for example. So just speaking about myself first to kind of give an overview. So my body is very sensitive to water retention. So water retention, usually for most people when they feel bloated, that's what is causing it, is excess water being retained within their system. And so this is usually often caused by determining it varies to different degrees depending on the person. But it's usually a combination of high sodium and or high carbohydrates levels within like that you've eaten within the day that will cause you to store excess water, retain excess water, and which will cause the scale weight to go up. But not it doesn't mean any fat has been accumulated or lost. When you see your scale change for me, it's very sensitive, which means that I could see a 5 pound difference from the morning to the night due to water retention. And just as a background, you can store up to 5 pounds of water, extra water that will go directly on the scale at any time, like on a given day. So that's why a lot of people see what they would deem unexplained fluctuations, but it's a very simple explanation for that. And also the degree to which you're sensitive, like I'm extremely sensitive, will affect how potentially it negatively impacts your psyche and like psychologically negatively impacts your progress, your tracking, your mood and everything that ultimately affects the outcome of the weight, the fat that you're trying to lose, right? So obviously you're not trying to lose weight, you're trying to lose fat. And that's the key to understand. And another key to understand is it is numbers, it is science. The net caloric state that you are in for an extended period of time. So we're not talking about an acute response to not eating or eating over a 24-hour window. We're talking about a long-term, over a week or longer. That net caloric balance determines your fat gain or loss when you account for all your other factors, like how much you move, your exercise, the calories in, calories out. That simple math of calories in versus calories out, always stick true to that, because that is at the core what will determine or what determines your weight or your fat rate over the long term. So with that in mind, being able to seeing the weight go up on the scale while you're trying to actually go through a weight loss phase, especially for someone who is extremely sensitive to water retention like me, can be very damaging to your progress, right? And damaging to how you feel about yourself, depending on, you know, how the weight loss impacts you and how, you know, you feel about your own body, your own progress and things like that. And so what I wanted to say is, when you, your body wants to stay in homeostasis, wants to stay in equilibrium. And so when you veer from that, depending again on your sensitivity to different factors, your scale, your body will react to weight loss. And if you're going through weight loss, over an extended period of time, and depending on a number of things, like one thing, for example, is if your diet isn't consistent, and by consistent, I mean you don't eat generally the same things every single day that are the same food groups with the same macronutrients and micronutrients and the same level of sodium in all your foods, the level of carbohydrates, all those things, then that can have a very big impact on the fluctuations that you'll see on your scale weight over time. And that, you know, is often what happens to a lot of people, especially those who don't you don't meal prep for every day. You would eat if you're busy, especially when you have time to eat what you can find to eat. If you're going out, for example, and that's something that's recently been happening to me over the past few months because of being busy. So keeping that in mind, one of the tricks or tools that I use is a lot of times for people who are sensitive to water retention, I find that a traditional coach or someone, if you read online, will tell you to take your measure your weight every single day at the same time for consistency's sake, and take the moving average of that every week. So let's say I want to lose a pound a week. I'm going to measure my weight every day on the scale.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if the average of last week is, or this week is less than last week, and so on and so forth as I go through weight loss. But what I found for someone like me is that often doesn't work because your weight can fluctuate up to like 5 pounds due to water. If you're losing weight at even like 2 pounds a week, if you lose weight at 2 pounds week one, 2 pounds in week two, you've lost 4 pounds of fat, right? But if you're extremely sensitive like me and your body's reaction to losing weight is keeping water in, mm-hmm. keeping a lot more water and retaining it, which is exactly the case with me, my scale weight will go up after 2 weeks, actually. If I took the average of it, it would actually go up or stay the same, even if I've lost 4 pounds. And so what I've had to do, and what I think a lot of people who are sensitive to this would do, or something that's good for them to do, would be actually, instead of taking the moving average, what I do is I take the minimum value, the absolute minimum value for the week, and I use that as my weekly value. So that way I don't have to track my weight every single day. I don't have to remember or log my weight every single day. All I do is I remember what's the lowest weight that I've recorded so far. If last week, sometime during the week, I recorded 190, then this week I don't have to remember my average for last week or anything like that. I just remember when I go below 190, then I know that or I get a better sense that I've achieved or moved forward in my weight loss goals, because I'm so sensitive to water retention. So that one day it might be 5 pounds heavier, one day it might be 5 pounds lighter. And if I eat a lot of sodium, for example, within the week, my weight might be high the entire week. And I might, in normal circumstances, I might deem that as a weight gain for the week, when I might have actually lost weight. And so a technique, that's one tip I use to combat the negative psychological impact, is to use the absolute minimum value. So just use your lowest scale weight that you find when you track it. And you don't have to do any calculations or anything. You just have to remember one number. Remember the weight that you're trying to beat. And I find that that's useful because that's the weight that's the most likely weight that you're actually at when you don't have any water retention, when you don't have any food in your system, whenever that is. So still, weigh yourself consistently if you feel like it, or even if you don't feel like it, weigh yourself and take the minimum value that you find on the scale, because that's going to be the one that most accurately represents you when you're in a state of no, like, nothing in your system, versus taking, a moving average, which can be extremely varied depending on if you're sensitive like me. So that's something that I guess I wanted to just say. And also, I'm going to link in the show notes a recent, I don't know if it's a paper, but it's an article at least, by someone in the community, Lyle McDonald, who's very, who's incredibly intelligent and very well accomplished and amazing in terms of the science in this field, but also a very strong personality. But regardless, his text speaks for itself. So this recent one was attributing a lot of the wishy-washy effects that we'll see in their weight fluctuating for a lot of people as they try to lose weight. This is especially important with someone like a bodybuilder who's going to be competing and needs to get or wants to get as lean as possible, or someone who's a power lifter and they need to lift in a specific weight class, so they have to get a specific scale weight, and so they want to track that as well. So this document talks about the effect of water retention on that, and so definitely recommend it as a read. And it's something that I've had to deal with for a long time, especially as initially a few years back was very, very overweight and had to lose the weight and use the scale to track my progress, and would feel have a negative feeling whenever I would see the scale go up instead of down, even though I calorically was doing the right things. And so it made me question, it made me maybe feel bad or feel a little bit depressed, and these small acute changes can affect the overall long-term plan that you have. And that's something that's incredibly important, is to always keep in mind that big picture goal, whether it be to get healthier, whether for competitive purposes, like I mentioned. So it's just something I wanted to share because I thought it would be important for some people.
No, that's great. And I think especially for, like I said, for those who actually, take it really seriously and like you track their, measurements on a daily, weekly basis, I think it's great that you're actually kind of giving a kind of your experience to see if there's anybody who can maybe relate to that. And if there's anyone like that, you know, comment on our Twitter, let us know. But one thing I wanted to add in as well, just for everybody in general, because I know this works and I promise you this works, is to mitigate water weight or water weight retention, drink green tea. I know that sounds so maybe simple or archaic, but I promise you, if you drink green tea, and I mean the caffeinated one, not the decaffeinated one, drink green tea, because it doesn't have too much caffeine to the point where you're going to get jittery or anything. Drink green tea every night, or especially on a night where you find that maybe you've binged on a lot of, you know, food that might not be good for you. I mean, let's be honest, we're all young, right? We're gonna go out, we're gonna eat with our friends, we're gonna do whatever. So it happens. Drink something like green tea, which is the caffeine acts as a diuretic,
yeah,
which will obviously help you excrete the water faster. And I promise you, it doesn't necessarily help you lose water weight, but it definitely mitigates or counteracts the effects of that. So when you do, say, weigh yourself at the end of the week or every day or whatever, you're not going to see as big of a shift in your weight. So that's just something I wanted to throw out there. Drinking green tea really does work. I do it every day. And Karen knows. I try and keep a very consistent diet, but I have those moments where I go nuts. And then when I drink green tea, then the next day, the weight that I've gained doesn't seem to be as drastic of a difference. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's, I just wanted to throw that in there. But yeah, no, that was good. So one thing I also wanted to throw in as well. So Karen's talked about weight loss. This is kind of shifting into a different gear. I wanted to talk about something that I another article I saw, this morning actually, for something called eSight glasses, where pretty much, so it was a story of this guy in Alberta who, he woke up one day, and I think his age, I'm just looking at the article now. He's fairly young. I think he said he's 20. Yeah. So he woke up one day and he said the night before his right eye was itching or something. So he just rubbed it, thinking, you know, my eye's itching. And then he woke up the next day, he was blind in his right eye. And then he was distressed and he didn't know what was going on. So in one eye, he lost his sight. And then pretty much it says here, 6 months later, the same thing happened in his left eye. So he went to a specialist and the doctor said that he had something called, and I'm reading this off the article because I don't know what it is. It's serpiginous choroiditis of the macula, which pretty much means, it says here, that the artery in the back of his eye burst and started bleeding and it leaked into his eyeball. So that caused pressure that crushed his retina, apparently. Yes. So this was like a young, independent 20-year-old. I think it says he's a welder, and he was used to living his life and all that. And then he literally had to move back home with his parents. Like he lost his significant other, his pet. So he had to walk around with the cane. He couldn't really, like, bright lights bothered his eyes. He had to keep the lights off, and he had to stay in the house most of the time. But then something that he came across, was the eSight glasses, which are glasses that actually allow him to see when he puts them on. And I just thought this was really cool. But the way they work, it says here, is that they've got two cameras mounted on the front, like where the lenses would be. And those cameras, pretty much project, images onto these little, like, LCD screens that would be in front of his eyes. And that's how he's able to, through those cameras, actually see his environment. The neat thing, though, which is pretty cool, is that it comes with a little controller, so you can pretty much zoom in, zoom out. It says modify the contrast or anything they're looking at in real time, which is pretty neat. Can you imagine if our eyes were actually like that in the future? Like, we could actually like zoom, like, sit here, and I could, like, zoom in on something and
if Elon Musk
adjust the color. Huh?
If Elon Musk's dream of combining humans and robots together comes true, then yeah, for sure.
Oh, God. I mean, that's scary and exciting at the same time. No, but I just wanted to share that just to, again, shed light on how much good is being done with using technology that we already have to actually create things that benefit others. So I just really wanted to kind of touch on that. But yeah, no, and then was there anything else, Karen, for health and all that you wanted to talk about, or?
No, I think that covers, like, there's probably stuff that I missed, but definitely because I've been busy, I've forgotten about a lot of things. But yeah, I think that's it for health and fitness.
Right. Okay. And then so I think that's it for that. But the other thing that we really wanted to touch, I wanted to touch on today, is something interesting that I came across. So the if anyone remembers The Handmaid's Tale, did you read it in high school?
I haven't read it in high school, but are we also talking about your phone thing?
Well, now we have to. No, I'll talk about that too. But no, but for Handmaid's Tale, did they not make you read it in high school?
They made some of us read it, but not or some I don't remember who, but I definitely did.
For like English class or whatever, no, you didn't have to, right? Okay, so The Handmaid's Tale, first of all, let me they have a TV show apparently for it, which I didn't know. So Handmaid's Tale, the original book is written by Margaret Atwood, I believe. And so basically what the story is it's about a dystopian society where, and someone correct me if I get this wrong, but it's a dystopian society where pretty much young women are used to breed offspring for rich couples, really? Which is kind of twisted. And they're called the handmaidens. And they live in the house together, and they're not allowed to have any kind of contact with men, or they're not allowed to engage in sexual behavior and all that. So pretty much they're used as walking, I hate to use this word, but ovens to carry the bun, pretty much. And so the story is based around one particular handmaiden named Offred, and how she pretty much challenges that view of the dystopian society. So they've brought this now to TV, which I thought was really cool. I've just started watching it. I've only watched the first episode, but it was really well done, I have to say. And, Margaret Atwood is actually I don't know if she's a producer or a screenwriter or something, but she's working, like the author of the book, she's actually working on that show and making sure everything's true to her book and her vision. But I think it's a really interesting show because it's something that, it's really scary because that's something that potentially could happen. Like, yeah, it probably won't, but it's one of those dystopias that actually could exist. Even if it's like way in the future. So it's really scary to think about, whether this kind of thing could actually come along, and to see it picturized on TV or whatever is pretty, pretty scary. So I just wanted to talk about that. And I'd seriously recommend watching the show, even just the first episode. And it's terrifying in a way, but it's really, really eye opening. And especially for our generation and people our age and stuff, it's really, I think it's really cool to watch these kind of shows just to get an idea of, where our future might be going, and hopefully we as a generation do our best to not let it get there. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So, I just wanted to talk about that. But I think that's it for this episode. This is going to be a really short one.
Oh, it is? We're not talking about...
Damn it! Yeah, damn it, Corin! Okay.
I thought this was actually the most exciting... Oh, and I just realized the show... It's not in the notes. You deleted it from the note. Oh, sly bastard. Sly bastard. Okay. I didn't even notice until now because I was like, where is it? Oh, God. Okay. So Shrek is going to talk about it because...
I'm going to talk about it.
We owe the customers follow-up, and I will not say anything until the rest of the episode.
Okay. I'm going to talk about it. Okay. I'm not going into too much detail because I don't want to. Okay. But anyways, so I last episode... I said that I'd purchased a Google Pixel and that I hate it and that I'm returning it. And then, but what you guys don't know is that, and this is so messed up, in between that episode and this episode, I actually decided to keep it thinking, oh, you know what? The camera's so good. I can forego the screen and all that. And I love the design and the hardware and all that. And then suffice to say, I had a bad customer service experience with Google, which made me want to return the Pixel and get the iPhone, which was what I was going to do anyway. So it was just a big waste of time. I mean, yo, honestly, like I don't even know what to say. It was so stupid.
I know I wasn't gonna say anything for the rest of the episode, but was a literal this was a literal on and off relationship, like on off, because it was first iPhone on. Then it was Google Pixel 2 off. Then he said hated it. So it was iPhone on again. Yeah. Then he actually decided to keep the Pixel 2, so it was off again. But then again, in the meantime, since then, now he decided to go back to the iPhone on. So that was a.
Yeah. It's funny. I was telling Karan this too, that I'm normally a very decisive person, but when it comes to things like tech, like, you know, oh, which phone should I get, or which iPad should I get, or whatever, that sort of thing, or hell, even food, I can be the most indecisive person in the world. Like, should I eat that Cinnabon? Should I not? Should I get the Pixel? Should I get the iPhone? Should I get the iPad Pro, or should I get the smaller version? I am all over the place, and Karan knows this. I need help. Yeah. I have problems with that. So, yeah. Just all the phones are good, guys. Just get whatever you want. Get whatever you want.
Don't listen to us. We don't know anything.
Yeah, especially Karan. Yeah, especially me. Yeah. No, but that was my stupid, like, back and forth with my phone. I have an iPhone now, thank goodness. I'm done. It's over. And if anything changes, like, Karan will literally, he has it recorded now. Yeah. If anything changes, so he will throw it back in my face. So, just saying.
That's all we wanted to talk about for this week, or this episode, I guess. And now we're off to...
What are we off to do, Karan?
Oh,
to watch Black Panther.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course. Hashtag Wakanda forever, man. Oh, you know what? We should talk about that in our next podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk
give
about
like a little review of.
Yeah, we'll talk about a review of Black Panther, as with every other reviewer on the planet, but still, ours is better. Ours is better.
Yeah, listen to ours. Ours is good. All right. No, awesome. Yeah, I think that was it for this episode, guys. So we'll see you in the next one.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed listening to us.
If not, then I'm so sorry.
Yep, Shrek's very sorry.
Otherwise, let us know what you'd like to hear about next time at CommandSK on Twitter. These are the three idiots in a minivan driving away.